We begin the current daf Maseches Beis daf Lamed Ches. We begin 7 lines down from the top of the Amud. The Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf and the previous Mishnah, where we spoke about the halachas of tchum as they relate to Yom Tov, where one is allowed to move objects like a behemah, an animal. Question is, what are the boundaries that one is allowed to move one's animal? Well, just like a person's body is only allowed to go up till 2,000 amos past his boundaries, which is 2,000 amos after that, same thing applies to his objects, his animals. Now, that the Gemara explains a discrepancy in certain items, how we define its halacha. And that is, the parameters of the tchum are defined generally by Bein HaShemashes. Whoever is in possession of it, then he's the one that the object becomes his. It's in his shvisa, it's in his halachic residence for Shabbos and Yom Tov. And that's the boundary of the object, just like the owner. Now, that Amashmul Shmuel says, however, that Sher Shel Patim, the ox of the fattener, that he would take oxen to fatten them up to then sell them at a hefty price, harehu karagli kaladim. Actually, his shvarim are not limited by his tchum. Actually, they're like the boundaries of any person that comes to him and purchases from him. Whether it's even someone from a different city who comes, let's say through an Eruv, can take it back home to where he came from. Now, the reason is because since it's normal for a mafatim, someone that fattens up these oxen, these animals, to sell them, so that means already from yesterday, his intention was whoever is going to come and purchase it is already, it's going to be his, and hence it takes on, even by Bein HaShemashes the night before, the tchum of the one who ends up purchasing it, and therefore no matter who it is, can take it to wherever their tchum is. However, Shur Shel Raya, the oxen of a shepherd, where he brings up, he has his own flock of his own animals. Now sometimes he goes and he sells it to neighbors and to those who know him. Such oxen, harehu karagli oisair, that they take on the tchum of the people of that city, which means to say 2,000 amos in every direction of this city. Now, that what that would mean is that even if the shepherd himself actually made an erev tchum in one direction, which means to say, like say he could go 4,000 amos to the north, that means he wouldn't be able to go even a footstep to the south, that would not prevent the people of the city who will purchase from the shepherd on Yom Tov to go and eat every direction 2,000 amos. And the reason is because, similar to the case of the Fatim, yesterday, already he had in mind, he knows that people, that his neighbors, his friends, they end up buying from him. And therefore, he has it in mind that whoever's going to buy it from him could take it to wherever their tchum is. Now, however, the difference between this and the Fatim is that people from another city don't know this guy. He's not a big merchant that sells animals like the Fatim. He's just a shepherd, and sometimes people who know him purchase from him. Therefore, they were never in mind. So therefore, it doesn't have their tchum. They wouldn't be able to take it back to their city, but people from the city who they know him, they were had in mind. Hence, it does have the halacha of their tchum too, and therefore they would be able to take it 2,000 amos in the direction, even if the shepherd wouldn't be able to. But the difference is for people from other cities, which that would only be a heter for the case of the Fatim, who everyone was included for such a big merchant. Now the Gemara resumes discussing our Mishnah that said Hashoyu kli mechaver me'ev yom tov. Again, where our Mishnah was discussing these similar halachas regarding how do we define whose tchum the object has. So we spoke about somebody that borrows an item. So that the Mishnah said, if someone borrows something from his friend from before Yom Tov, then we said that it will have like the halacha of the ragli hashel. It means the object will be able to be moved within the boundary of the borrower, not of the lender, although the lender owns it, but the borrower will be able to take it as far as he can go. So that the Gemara's pshit is pretty obvious. Since he borrowed it from him before Yom Tov, so it's within his rishus, he can do with it as he pleases. He's not allowed to ruin it, but he can utilize it. Hence, it takes on his tchum and his halachic residence. So why would we think that it wouldn't have his halacha that we have to say that chiddush in the Mishnah? That the Gemara answers, Leit Tzricha, actually, we needed it for a case, Shlei Masru Lo Ela B'Yom Tov. Although he, quote, borrowed it from before Yom Tov, he didn't give him the actual object until Yom Tov. Now, I would have thought to say that no, since he never got it before Yom Tov, it was in the, still the possession of the lender when Yom Tov started. Therefore, it would not have the halachic residence as the borrower, rather of the tchum of the lender. Kamashmal has a chiddush of our Mishnah that although it says that he borrowed it from him before Yom Tov, it means just in words. It says, can you lend me your this object? And he says, yeah, sure. But he didn't take it from him from before Yom Tov. That the chiddush of the Mishnah is that since he's relying on it, he already puts it into his domain. He knows that he's going to be using it on Yom Tov. Although it's still in the lender's possession, it will have the halachic of tchumin related to the shayel and not of the mashal. So the Gemara says, actually, Misayel Rabbi Yechon, this supports what Rabbi Yechon had said. Damer Rabbi Yechon, because Rabbi Yechon had said, Hashol kli mechaver me'ev Yom Tov. Someone borrows a utensil from his friend from before Yom Tov. Afal pishli nosnul el Yom Tov. Even though he doesn't end up giving it to him until Yom Tov, harei karag la shayel, that has the same halacha as the as the boundaries as how far the feet of the borrower could go, even though he didn't get it, but since he borrowed it from him, he already made up with him, that already gives it the tchum of the shayel and not the mashal, as we explained, that's the case of our Mishnah. Now the Mishnah continued, however, b'yamtiv, if he only borrowed it from him on yamtiv, then karagli ha-mashal. Then it will be only as far as the lender could go, not as the borrower wants to go, as he could go himself. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, now, since the first statement, that the sentence before in our Mishnah that we just explained just before, that was talking about when he borrowed it before Yom Tov, he didn't even take the object, it was just a verbal agreement that he's going to borrow it on Yom Tov. And now, the Sefer that's saying that even that, which is what we're talking about, the verbal agreement, even that wasn't done before Yom Tov, it was only done on Yom Tov. So on that, the Gemara's Peshitta, well, it's pretty obvious in such a case where you didn't even make up that you're going to borrow it from before Yom Tov. And even only that was done in Yom Tov. Well, of course, Bein HaShemashes, when the Tchumen are defined, was going to be the Ragli HaMashal, not the Shoyel. What is the Chiddush that we're saying that it's going to be like the lender? Of course, it's not going to be like the borrower. He didn't even ask him to use it until Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, Lo Yitzvich, and actually it's necessary to say this Chiddush, because the Ragli HaShalmin, actually this borrower, he always, every Yom Tov, he comes and he borrows this item. Now, I would have thought to say that the lender already puts it in the domain of the borrower, similar to when they make a beforehand, which we said actually does, it does become like the regular shell. Now, Kamashmon, that's what the Mishnah is teaching us, that Meimo Amr, the lender, says, you know, Dilma, maybe, he didn't come to me before Yom Tov as he generally does. Mishkach in the Shachrin of Azul V'Shalmaneh, maybe this time he finally found somebody else to go ahead and borrow this item which he never bought yet, and he got it from him, and therefore he doesn't automatically put it in his Rishus of the borrower to say that it'll have his Tchum. He still holds on to it in his domain, it has his halachic residence, and that's why we'll have the Tchum of the Mashal, not of the Shayel, even though he didn't have a verbal agreement beforehand. I would have assumed, we would have assumed that he's still giving it to him because he always comes to him. But the chiddush is that since he didn't come to him this time, he does not put in his domain, and that's why it's karagli hamashal. Now the Mishnah continued with a similar case. So to a woman that borrows from her friend certain ingredients, so he said that the tchum of this baked item or this cooked dish will be limited to both of their tchumen, because the woman that's making the dish, she's using her dough, she's using all her things, but the other friend is giving the spices, is giving the water, giving the salt. Now therefore, in these ingredients, has a tchum of somebody else. So if, let's say, she made an erev one way and she made an erev other way, they're limited within both boundaries because it has the tchum of both of them in this object. Now, this Gemara brings a story related to this, that Kisolik Rebaba, when Rebaba wanted to go up to Eretz Yisrael from Bavel, or when he was on the road going up, Amar, he said the following tefillah. He said, Yehi Rava, let it be the will that when I get up there to Eretz Yisrael, the Eim and Milsa, that I say something, in other words, a halachic teaching, to Tiskabel, that the sages of Eretz Yisrael should accept what I'm saying and I shouldn't be embarrassed that I said something foolish. Now, Kisalik, when he actually got up there, when he made it to Eretz Yisrael, so Ashkeche, he found Reb Yechanan, Reb Chinner Bar Papi, Reb Zera, found these three Talmud Chacham sitting. Vamrilan, some say it was actually Reb Avo, Reb Shimon Ben Pazi, Reb Yitzchak Nafcha. V'yasri Kam, and they were sitting and they were discussing the sugya that we're talking about over here. And they asked, Amai, why do we say that this challah or this dish will have what's called in the Mishnah Karagli Shtein, will have the halacha of the tchum of both women, but v'liftil, we should say the halachic principle of bitl, which is to nullify the isra of tchumen of the mayim melech, of the water and the salt, which is the minority, legabe isra to the dough, which is the majority. Generally, we say halacha bitl b'ray. The minority becomes nullified in the majority. Now, since these water and salt that she borrowed from her friend is just a minority, well, why don't we say bitl b'ray? And if we do, why is she limited to that woman's tchum? It's like it's not even there. It's totally bitl. It's nullified in the majority. Why do we say we're limited to the other woman? So Amar Lahu Rebaba said to these Talmid Chachamim, and essentially what he was telling them was that because this woman's portion in this challah or in this baked dish is just a minority, so she should lose her shame, her bilis, her ownership of that amount that's being put into this challah or into this cooked dish. And that is, as Gemara continues on the base, he explains his logic. He says, he gives the following mashal. He says, let's say somebody had a kav, which is a certain measurement of wheat. They got mixed in, basura kav chitin shel chaver. It got mixed into 10 kav of wheat of his friend. Now, yoichel halah, so you tell me that the one who has the 10 kav and who the majority is his, should eat that his friend's kav of chitin v'chadi, and he should rejoice. In other words, he should enjoy something that he didn't work for that's not his. How can you say that if his friend's stuff got mixed in, even though he's the minority, it's 10 to 1, we don't say that, oh, okay, yours is not even here, it doesn't exist, your kava is not here, I could eat it, and it's mine. You wouldn't say that because this person owns whatever it is amount in this person's that it got mixed in together. Now, therefore, Rabbi was telling them, the same thing is over here. You can't say that no matter how small the amount of this woman's water or salt or spice that's in here, it's nullified. Because since this water was acquired, the shvis of this woman, just like you would agree to me that someone's money doesn't get nullified once it enters someone else's monies, that it should get lost, here also, this is her money, which is the amount of, however minimal it is, of the water and the salt and the spices, and therefore, it doesn't lose her definition of her being hers, and since it's hers, it has her tchum, and of course it's limited, and you don't say bitul b'rit. Now, the Gemara tells us that achichu lahu. They laughed at Rababa. Now, Amalahu Rababa responded to them, he says, Gulsaichi, he says, your clothing, shakli, I took, that you're going to laugh at me? Why are you laughing at me? Hadu achichu lahu. Again, they laughed at him. Now, Amr Avayshe said regarding that incident, Shaper Avad Achicholau. It was proper that they laughed at what he was trying to say. As he explains, because Maishno Chitin Bisa'irin Deloy Kamalahu, why was it when the example the Rababa used to explain his logic, he didn't say a case of when one person has one kav of Chitin, of wheat, that got mixed to 10 kav of Sa'irin of barley of somebody else? Now, it didn't say that. When he would say that, what, this person can laugh at this person and eat up his stuff, even though it's 1 towards 10? Now, what it would sound like, why he didn't say a mixture of chidin and sa'irin, is because that would be a case of min b'she'enim minay. When you have two different types, two different species of produce. Now, the havali min b'she'enim minay, now since that would be a case of min b'she'enim minay, two different types, now it sounds like that even he would agree, Rababa, Umin b'she'enim minay, batal, because generally the halacha is that when you have two different types that mix together, then we would say that the 10 kavan of sa'irin would nullify the 1 kav of somebody else's chit. Now, if so, our case is also the same. We have flour, and you have somebody, other woman, giving water or salt, where they're min b'she'enim minay. And therefore, even Rababa, it's obvious that it's inherently flawed his logic, because you could tell from what he was saying, he wasn't taking it the distance and saying, even in the case when they're min b'she'enim minay, where everybody agrees, generally there's going to be halacha of bittel. He doesn't say that because it sounds like he would agree there would be bittel. Now if so, even chit mechit nami, even if there was wheat and somebody else would give wheat, which is the case he's giving as the analogy of the 10 kavan of chit and 1 kav of chit, also nehidel Rabbi Yehuda l'batel, so even though as this is a machlekes in Masechtas Menachas of Chavbez and Manah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan, that Rabbi Yehuda holds that, yeah, min b'she'enim minay creates bittel, but when they're the same type, there's no bittel. And therefore, that would make sense in the mashal that he's giving. But the Rabban and Mittel Batel, the Rabban hold that it is Batel, even when they're the same type. Most definitely, in our case, we're discussing in our halach of our Mishnah, where there are different types. And therefore, you could tell that even he himself was holding back, and thereby showing the flaw in his logic, that you see that Bittel would work even when it is owned by different people. As in the case of when one person's kav would get mixed in 10 kav of siren, he would agree that would be batel, so therefore the same thing would apply if they're both chitin, and therefore the same thing would apply to the case of halacha of our Mishnah, why don't we say bittel b'rev, and that's why they laughed at him. What type of a logic is it to say that someone's money, where even he himself agrees that, yes, even someone's money would be batel? Now, Amalei Rav Safar, so Rav Safar said to Rav Aisha, who Rav Aisha was trying to explain why those Talmid Chacham laughed at Rababa's logic, he says, Moshe, which is a term that says, like the glory of Moshe Beinu, he was swearing by Moshe. Shapa Kamrit, you think you're saying a good claim? In other words, why are you agreeing to them that they laughed at Rababa? Which essentially what that means is that they had this question on the Mishnah, which Rababa tried answering, and he's saying, no, Rababa's not giving a good answer. But V'lei Shemilahu, didn't those Rabbanan who are asking these questions on our Mishnah, didn't they hear of Hoda Amr B'chiyi K'tesva Mishmei D'Rav? That Rav said as follows. If someone selects, he picks out, let's say someone has a silo full of grain, and somebody wants to do him a favor, his friend, he picks out all the pebbles from that person's grain. Now, actually, he has to pay for him the value of wheat. Now, the reason is because the custom is that although there's some pebbles that's mixed in, that people do not pick that out, which means to say that you sell it by weight, or however the sale is being done, but you could sell it with the pebbles that are inside of it. Therefore, when you're picking out the pebbles, you're not doing him a favor, you're actually creating a loss for him. because now when he's going to sell it, he's going to be getting less, which he would be getting the value of those pebbles in the form of wheat, because he'd be selling it based as if it's wheat, because the custom is not to have to take it. So you have to actually pay him for that amount of pebbles in the amount of wheat. Now, Alma, what we see from this halacha of Rav, is because ki lechasre, because since you're making him lose from the measurement that he's selling, so even though actually the pebbles are not even worth anything, still you're creating a loss. Now, if so, kol shekein hachinami, here also, when we're talking about water and salt, we're talking about something that is a monetary loss, where it's somebody's money. Someone owns the water or the salt or the spices that she's giving to her friend. For sure it's not going to be batel b'rayv, because kilach asrei, you're creating a loss of quantity, of value, which is even if the thing inherently itself it has no value, which we see by the pebbles. But since overall, in the context of money, there's a loss of money, so therefore we do consider it as significant, and it's not considered, there's no bittel in that. Now, which, even though inherently it is bittel, because there's no value to it. Now, if, therefore, in such a case where we're talking about where the mayim, the melach, and the tavlin is somebody else's money, so how could you say that's going to be bittel? Because even when something has no value at all, we don't say that it's bittel. All the more so over here, when someone has, this other woman has invested some waters and salt and some spices, how can you say that it will not, that you're trying to ask on our Mishnah, which then they're laughing on Rebaba, because that it should be batel. How could it be batel if it's someone else's money? Now, Amalei Abaye, so Abaye responded back to Rav Safra, who he was asking on Reb Yishya, who he was standing up for those who were laughing at Rebaba, that how are you answering our Mishnah with this, in a way sticking up for Rebaba, in a way refuting what Rav Yishya had said, but V'loi Shani Le Lamar, don't you hold there's a difference? Don't you think there's a difference between money that has a claimant and money that doesn't? And that is, our Mishnah is talking about a case where no one's claiming. The woman that gave the water or the salt or the spices for that cooked dish or that thing that's being baked, she's not claiming it. There's no monetary stock over here that is at stake. She's lending it to her till after Yom Tov when she'll pay her back. Now, therefore, what that means essentially is when we're discussing and evaluating this dough, the only thing that has to be evaluated is the Isser Shvisa regarding Halachas of Tchum, and that is, since this other woman has her money mixed in over here, so, but not because there's a monetary discussion over here, because no problem, you could use the dough, you can use the water, I gave it to you, you pay me back after Yom Tov. Now, if that's the case, so the only thing under discussion that we have to consider here is her water, but not because of the monetary aspect, but because of the prohibition aspect. Now, regarding that, there should be a din of bittel b'rayv, because it's money that has no claimants. And therefore, that's not considered money in the sense of that will withhold, like you're bringing me from the halacha of Rav. You're right. Halacha of Rav says, even if it has no value, will not be bittel, because it still has monetary value. You're right. On regards to that, I wouldn't say bittel b'rayv. But that's not the discussion we're having over here regarding the halacha of the dough in our Mishnah. That is because the money has no claimants. She's okay with her keeping it for herself. She's going to pay her back after Yom Tov. The whole discussion today on Yom Tov is, do we see, in regards to Isser, that person's boundaries limiting this other woman's boundaries? Regarding that, why should we limit it? It's not monetary, it's Isser. And Isser, we say bittel b'rayv. So Amalei, Sir Asaf responded back to Abaye. Now, do you think he was saying if something doesn't have a claimant, then it loses the monetary value of the other person and then it's easier to become batel? In other words, he was telling him, do you think that the din of bittel b'rayv actually even depends on ownership or not? So therefore, he points out to him both ways that it doesn't depend on having an owner, whether to withhold or if it doesn't have an owner to say that it will not withhold and it will be batel. Because, well, tameich, according to your reasoning, that it depends on ownership. In other words, if there's a claimant over here, then we'll discover that if there's a claimant over here, that will withhold that it being batel. But if there is no claimant, like you're trying to say, Abaye, in the case of our Mishnah, that then it will be batel. But according to your reasoning, the Hadam, Rav Chizda, this is what Rav Chizda says. Now, Rav Chizda is going on one opinion, which is explaining another opinion. That is, there's an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that's mentioned in Masechtas Menachos, as we alluded to this before, that says that although there's halacha of bittel, b'rayv, but when they're min b'mina, when they're both from the same species, the same type, then it's not bittel. It's only when it's min b'she'ina, meaning when they're two different species, then we'll say that one will be nullified in the other. Now, regarding the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Chiya teaches that a nevela and a slaughtered animal, which a nebeil is an animal that was not properly slaughtered. It died. And the shchuta is one that was properly slaughtered. Now, on that, Rebbe Chiya explains that even though they're both animals, they're both meat, that they could be batel one with the other. Now, on that, Rebbe Chiya explains that because when did Rebbe Yehuda say that min b'minai, when they're both the same type, which this seems to be the same type, they're both meat, that when it's not going to be batel, that's only where it's possible to be exactly like the other type of that same min. But where they cannot be the same, that halachically will have the status of min b'she'in l'minai and therefore be batel. Now, Rav Chizkiya comes to explain what Rav Chiya had said, that this of possible or not being possible to be like the other thing, who gets to define that criteria? There's two items. There is the mevatel, what's nullifying, which is the majority, and then there's the nullified, which is the minority. Which one has to be like the other one to say that it's going to be the same type and then not batel, or not like the other one, therefore not being batel? So Rav Chizkiya comes to explain that the criteria is the mevatel, which is the majority that defines it. In other words, if it's possible for the majority to be like the minority regarding its halachas, then that's considered min b'minei, like they're the same type. If not, then we qualify it as min b'she'in b'minei. Now, therefore, that's where Rav Chizkiya's halacha begins. Now, therefore, if someone has a kazayas of nevela, of a dead animal that wasn't properly slaughtered, which that got mixed in with many other olive-sized pieces of meat of an animal that was slaughtered. So that's the minority. That's batla b'shchuta, that is nullified in the majority of those pieces that were properly slaughtered. And it's as if the nevela is not even there. And therefore, if someone touched any of these pieces of meat, would not become tame. And the reason is because we would qualify this as min b'she'enoi minoi, which Rabbi Yehuda agrees would be batel. Now, the reason for that is l'fishi'i efshel shchuta, because it's not possible for the pieces of meat that were slaughtered, which they are the majority, which is what we're calling the mevatel, the nullifier, she'te'asa nevela, that it should be like the minority that of something that's a nevela, meaning to be metame b'mage b'masa, like a nevela, because once an animal slaughtered, you can't make it into nevela anymore. So therefore, that's halachically considered as min b'she'enoi minoi. However, shchuta, if you have a slaughtered piece of meat that got mixed into the majority of them being nevela pieces, then eina b'teila b'nevela. The slaughtered piece is not batel in the majority of nevela pieces. In other words, that it would be considered as if someone touches any of the pieces of meat, that it would be like definitely for sure you're touching nevela, because that's what bitl would do. And hence, if that would be the case, then you would burn truma that touches it, because it's for sure touching the nevela, that we wouldn't say, because maybe actually the piece is schuta and it's not going to be batel in the majority of the nevela pieces. Why? Lefisha e efshel nevela. It's not possible for the nevela, which that's the majority pieces, which is the mevatel, it's the nullifier, shetiasa schuta, that it should be halachically like a slaughtered piece of meat, meaning to be tahar like a schuta. And the reason is because when it spoils, it's not fit anymore for a ger, which means to say that's the criteria which the Gemara explains elsewhere, that then that makes it not being called for the halachas of tumah like a nevela. And therefore, since it's possible for the nevela to be halachically like a shchuta, therefore that's going to be a case of min b'minai, because it could take on that same halachic characteristics of the piece that's being nullified. And therefore, that, as Rav Chizkiya explained what Rav Chiya had said in the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that will be considered min b'minai. Now, this is where that Rav Safra concludes his question that he's asking on Abaya. Now, he's asking, Hachi Nami, are you going to say here also Abaya regarding the case of Rav Chizkiya when we're talking about pieces of nevela and shchuta being mixed together? Tchi isla balam, that if there's owners, separate owners for the nevela meat and the slaughter meat, the loy batla? Are you telling me that in such a case it's not going to be batl? In other words, this is a classic case of bitl b'raiv, where we're qualifying just in Rabbi Yehuda that it's only by min b'she'ena minay, not min b'minay, and that Rav Chizkiya was explaining exactly what's the case. But when you're having pieces of meat that are mixed kosher and non-kosher, are you telling me that if one person owns the kosher and the other one owns the non-kosher, then we're not going to say bitl b'raiv because of someone's money? You're telling me that that's the defining characteristic, that money, you can't say that his stuff are being batel. And that's why you're telling me that it's different in the case of our Mishnah, which doesn't have an owner, that there, in other words, it has an owner but doesn't have a claim, and therefore it's not considered at least halachically like money, and therefore it would be batel. But how can you say such a thing? Now, he even goes the other way now. He says, because that's classically bitl. You tell me bitl doesn't work when there's different owners? Now, v'chitei mehachinami, And if you're going to say, actually, that is that case, that if there were separate owners, it wouldn't be batel. Even if you have a million pieces of kosher, one of non-kosher, or the other way around, it wouldn't be batel because it's separate owners and ownership cannot be relinquished, cannot become batel, nullified in someone else's. But v'hatanya, we learned in the Braisa, the reverse. In other words, the other extreme of what I'm arguing you. That even when there is no owners, even then it doesn't lose the chashibas of mammon. So first he asked him one way, that regarding when there is an owner, that you see that it doesn't make a difference, it will be batel. And now we show him the other way around, even when there is no owner, that we see that it will not prevent the fact that it still has monetary value, and that it has nothing to do with bittel either way. Now Rashi tells us actually that although it says in the Gemara, Tnan, it's not really a Mishnah, it's actually just understood from his statement that said in Masechtas Erevin Daf Mem Hei. But on this, the Gemara is asking, but we learned in the Braisa. Regarding objects that are ownerless, that are found. So on that, the halacha is kain shvisa. So it acquires a halachic residence of tchumen, and therefore what that means is that if somebody finds it on Shabbos or Yom Tov, he can go ahead and take it from where he finds it, 2,000 amos in any direction, but he can't take it for wherever he had made erev that he could go on Yom Tov, because it actually has its own shvisa, it has its own halachic Shabbos residence, even though it's ownerless. Now, the reason is because avabisha ein lehem bailim, even though it doesn't have owners, daimin kemisha lehem bailim, halachically we consider it as if it does have bailim. Now, one thing we see is that something could be considered significantly an object as mammon even without owners. Now, if so, then it makes sense that what our mission is saying, that even though there are no taiva, there's no claim, you're right, this woman lent to this other woman, used the water, used the salt, no problem, I'm not going to take it back from you, I'm not claiming it from you. But still, the fact that there's no taiva, even if there's no owner, it still makes it inherent an object of money that's owned by someone, because even when it's ownerless, it's considered owned by the object itself, which therefore it shouldn't be batel. And essentially this brings us back to the question that we were mentioning before, that how can you, Abaye, say that regarding my question, Rabbi Yishai, that it should be difficult on Rababa? Well, we see that it has nothing to do, and therefore it shouldn't be batel b'rov, like Rababa had said. And therefore, what's your question that you're saying that there's a difference between mamash yesh leitav and mamash ein leitav? Well, we see it has nothing to do with, it has claimants, doesn't have claimants, there's an owner, there's not an owner, even when there's no owner, which our case in our mission is definitely not less than that. There is an owner, she's just not claiming the water and the salt from our Yom Tov, still has her invested over here. Because even when there's no owner, the object has inherently a tchum. So too, the water and the salt she's putting in over here has a tchum, and therefore if it has a tchum, it should not be batel. And that's why our mission says that it has the tchum of both of them. What is your question? Why did they laugh at Rababa? So Amalei, Sabai said to Rav Safra, he says, wait a second. You have still not resolved the interpretation of our Mishnah. Because even if there are taivin, even if there are claimants, you could still ask, as these chacham had asked, and therefore they laughed at Rababa, that it should be batel. Now, this that you're bringing to me and you're asking from the case of Bar Tzroris, which you ask from the case of Rav, that you see that there still has inherent value for the object, even if it doesn't have inherent value because of the loss of money. Therefore, here also this woman has her water and salt invested, and therefore has her tchum. But on that, mikom edamis yisrul lemaimina, can you compare iser, which is the halachas of prohibitions, to money, which is the loss of money? And that is isur batel. Iser, as we're discussing in our Mishnah, which is why we're asking on the Mishnah, which is talking about isur, which is the halachas of tchum, that should be nullified, b'raiv. Memaimina loy batel. Regarding that case of Rav, you're right. Money does not become nullified, the minority in the majority, to say that someone's money will be acquired by the other person's money, which was really what Rababa had said, that if someone has a kav of chit and mixed into someone else's, you're right. Regarding money, we never said anything like that. Of course you're not going to mevatel someone else's wheat if it falls into his wheat. Oh, batel, your thing's not here anymore. Of course we're not going to say that. But that's what the inherent flaw in the logic of Rababa was, is we're not discussing the person's money over there. Of course, this woman owes her the water and the salt. We're discussing but Isser, which is just a prohibition of Tchumen, which there is regarding it. And that's why we have this question on the Mishnah. And again, that's why they laughed at Rababa, because it has nothing to do with Mammon. With Mammon, you're right, that's the case you're bringing from Rav. And that's the muscle that Rababa brought. That all makes sense. But that's regarding monetary law, we're discussing Isser, and regarding Isser, we should say Bitl Barev. And that's where the Gemara concludes that discussion, and that's why they laughed at Rababa. But now the Gemara itself asks, now since the resolution that Abaya offered, that Rababa had offered, was not correct, and that's why they laughed at him. And although Rabbi Yishai tried defending, this is what Rabbi Safra responded. This is the discussion with Rababa, with Abaya and Rav Safra. Now, so then the Gemara says, but time am I. So what is the reason of our Mishnah? Why is it that it's not batal? If we're not discussing monetary law, we're just discussing Isser, which is the tchum of one person and the tchum of the other one. So we should say the minority of the water and the salt and the spices should be batal in the raiv of the dough and the thing that's being cooked. So that the Gemara brings three answers. The first two are Abaye and Rava. Actually, they're not arguing. Just one's talking about the dough and the other one's talking about the case of the gedera of the cooked dish. Abaye says that gzeres shematase isa b'shutlis. The reason why we limit it to each one's tchum, you're right. Really, it should be batal b'raiv. But if we say that the water and the salt will not make forbidden on that woman to how far you could take the dough, now they might end up one time making a dough with partnerships. Now, then they might confuse this and think that each one does not limit the other one, and then each one will take it to where they could do it. Now, that's not the case when they're partnerships, because then actually they are both considered bialimanet. Then they would be limited, as we explained in the previous dafim. Therefore, since of that could be easily confused when she lends her an ingredient versus when doing in partnership. Therefore, we said in all situations they're going to limit each other, even though with regards to the ikar halacha, it should be that the miyat should be batal b'raiv. Rava Amar, Rava says regarding the case of the kedera, again, he's not arguing the Abaye, he's just talking about the other case. He says, tavlin l'tamei avidi. So we explained the case of the water and the salt, which is by the dough. And regarding the case of the spices, he says, spices are meant to give flavor to the dish. The timely bottle. Flavor cannot become bottle. In halacha of bitl, flavors do not become nullified. It's prominent, it's significant, which does not work well with the concept of bitl, which means that it's not here anymore, we don't see it anymore, it's bottle. And since it's giving a flavor, that's why, even though the majority is not it, it will not become bottle, and that's why it's limited by the tchum of even the woman who's giving the spices. Now the Gemara continues to talk about Lama Tesam et Aleph. Rav Ashi Amar, he gives a third answer, also regarding the primary halachas of bitl themselves. He says, Mishum de Havalei, because this Isra of Tchum, which is what we're discussing, which is that we're limiting it to the Tchum of both women, is Davish Yesh L'Matirin. It's considered in Halach as a Bittel, something that has a permitter. In other words, tomorrow you could take it as far as you want to, which means, say, the limitation of the Isra of Tchum is something that will not forever be there. It will have permitters at a certain time. Or even today, you could eat it right here and not take it there. Now, the Halach is, we'll call Davish Yesh L'Matirin, anything that although generally we would utilize the halachas of bittel, which is on a sense like a diavid, we're saying that, okay, although there's something here that's not kosher or something that's not appropriate for this halacha, but since it's the minority, it's nullified in the majority, but if it has a permitted way of doing it, then the halacha is that filibah elav le-bottel, then even in 1,000 it does not become bottle. And therefore, since here it's talking about that there is a permitted way of consuming or bringing or doing whatever you need to do with this challah or this cooked dish, therefore, even though it's a minority, it will not be batal because we don't say bitl when there is matim, when there is permitted ways of consuming it or utilizing it. And therefore, we're going to consider significant the spices and the water and the salt because it's considered davish shel matirin, and that's why it's not going to be batal.